Well, welcome everyone. Glad to have you here. We were thinking about tonight is speaking about lines of development in but you know, from a context of integral theory, but also from the context within the context that we're working from recovery, what that actually means. And I think it's a pretty useful construct, and pretty much forms one of the cores of the whole integral recovery approach. So maybe before I fire away, I just want to get what any of your understanding is of lines at the moment, so that I don't necessarily cover ground that that you guys are aware of. So maybe just to give each of you like a minute or two or so, just to say what your understanding of lines of development is, or if you have encountered that before in the context of integral theory or integral recovery.
I'll chime
in.
The way I understand it is that there's multiple, I guess we'll call them intelligences, cognitive, emotional, spiritual, physical. And while some people can actually, you know, become advanced in some of those areas, like you can have a very high degree, let's say, of cognitive intelligence, you're just a very smart person, you can read books, memorize them, you know, complex algorithms become, you know, come easy to you, you may be a financial wizard, but you have a very low degree of, let's say, moral or ethical intelligence. And you know, obviously dealing with someone like that, you know, could be very difficult. I mean, you can go out and commit a lot of, you know, white collar crime, et cetera, or maybe someone has a high degree of physical intelligence and they're very, very healthy. They stay very fit, but they can't relate to anybody. You know, there's no emotional intelligence there. They're just kind of like a brute. So am I on the right track in that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
That's a good summary there. Thank you, Hamlet. And Julian, Victoria, for you?
Well, this is Victoria, and Hamlet covered it well. I don't have an in-depth study or knowledge, but just superficially, as Hamlet was saying, just the understanding of the various intelligences, and in this context of recovery, the need to develop and balance as much of those as we can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Also spot on.
Hi, this is Julie. I always remember the example that Ken Wilber gave in his book, or maybe it was, I think it was in the recording Cosmic Consciousness. And this is how I always relate to it, that people have different lines of development. And he gives the example of this sweet little grandma that he knew that was just, you know, the typical sweet little grandma. But you put her in an environment with certain people, and she exhibited amber lines of racism. And so he was talking about, you know, different people have these developmental lines, and they can show up with different cognitive levels that manifest themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a good example. Thanks, Judy. Well, so basically just listening to you guys, I mean, I think you've got a very good understanding of the basic concept of lines of development as it's articulated, you know, within the integral approach. So I'm not going to spend too much time on you know, covering what integral theory says about lines, because I think you guys, you know, understand it very, very clearly. So I want to focus primarily on lines in the context of recovery, and how that can inform us around a practice, etc. So I think I think really the constructs of lines of development and stages of development are so intertwined that one can't really have a conversation about lines of development without touching about stages of development. Because as you guys pointed out, you know, each of these lines of development are fluctuating or moving through different stages. So a line is always relative to a particular stage. So I think the usefulness of recovery for us is that, as you guys pointed out, you know, integral theory points out that, you know, there's multiple intelligences that people can have, and, you know, Wilbur relies strongly on the work of Howard Gardner and those guys that have indicated that, you know, what we consider purely sort of cognitive intelligence or intelligence, I think Gardner speaks about 9 or 11 types of intelligences, if I'm not mistaken, that people can exhibit, in contrast to in the olden days. Well, I don't know if it's the olden days, but in school, when they normally do an IQ test, I think a conventional IQ test basically tests for 3 types of intelligence. I think it's visual, spatial, mathematics, and language, and pretty much leaves, you know, stuff like music or creativity, all those types of intelligences are completely in a score. So our IQ test is pretty accurate in the areas that it measures, but it certainly doesn't give a global view of somebody's intelligence. So I think the value of recovery is that the way that I understand recovery is that, you know, sort of combining the quadrants, the states, and the lines in one construct is that anybody in recovery, well, anybody at all for that matter, but let's use the person in a recovery process, finds himself living in all 4 quadrants, and using a sort of existential concept, his being in the world spans all 4 quadrants. So basically his essence as a human being isn't just his interior, he also exists as a body. His essence is made up of his relationships, the world he finds himself in, his environment, etc. All those things make up who the person is. Now, for somebody in recovery, the 2 things that's useful about that is that, firstly, addiction is going to affect, you know, pretty much all those areas. So all aspects of somebody's being in the world is going to be affected by addiction. So looking at from a quadrant perspective, you know, all 4 quadrants are going to be affected. And, you know, these quadrants, all of these quadrants have little lines of development. And, you know, a quadrant is, you know, a line and a quadrant are very similar. The line is really just looking at an aspect of a quadrant from a developmental point of view. So, you know, lines aren't things in quadrants. You know, quadrants have levels of development. And each of these levels of development of all the areas of the quadrants are at a stage of development. So it's, you know, it's really impossible, nearly speaking about any of these ideas separately, because they all really refer to the same thing, just from a different perspective. So the first thing it points out is that somebody is a late-stage addict or somebody that's been using a long time, you know, all the quadrants are affected, which means that, you know, each of the lines of development that a person displays in his life, whether it's intellectual or psychological or self-system or emotional or social, etc., each of these lines of development are going to be affected. And obviously it's not going to be affected in the sense that these lines are going to develop up the spectrum of consciousness or spectrum of development. You know, these lines will be affected negatively. So that's the first thing that it points out in recovery, is that all our lines of development, all our multiple intelligences in all 4 quadrants, including your environmental, which, you know, isn't normally seen as a line of intelligence, but, you know, if you live in a stable environment, you know, that can also be seen as a level of development relative to living on the street. That's a more stable sort of stage. So clearly all of these lines are going to be affected by addiction. And the way that we understand it is once somebody enters recovery, you know, all the one of the aims of recovery is to develop a program that adequately addresses all these different lines of development within a person to get these lines of development of the recovering addict to some level of stability or some level of health. And I think what Wilbur points out, and certainly what we've seen working with people in recovery, is very often you'll find people in recovery, you know, certain lines might not have been that badly affected, but certain lines have been virtually, once they're destroyed, because you obviously can't destroy a line in somebody, but has suffered so tremendously that it's operating at a very primitive level of development. And if you have one or two lines that are really badly affected, this is going to affect the whole system. You know, your whole lifestyle or the recovery system is going to be badly affected by any problem, you know, any issue in any line of development. So really the main aim, one of the primary aims of the healthy recovery process is to make sure that all your lines, multiple intelligences, whatever we want to call it, is being addressed, and that there's recovery practices in these various areas. And I think one of the problems with conventional treatment has been is that it focuses on, I won't say a small section, but it focuses on certain areas predominantly, which will be, you know, the upper sort of left quadrant, and the lines of development that's in there, the emotional or psychological, etc., and then a bit of the lower left quadrant, social, fellowship, support, and maybe touches upon, you know, some elements of the upper right quadrant, physical health, some of the lines of development that is relevant to those areas. But there's a lot of areas that it doesn't touch. One of the areas that I think conventional treatment really doesn't pay enough attention to is the lower right quadrant, your actual environment. And I've seen many people in recovery relapse or, you know, go through a tremendous crisis when their administrative issues or their financial issues or their legal issues, et cetera, hasn't been adequately addressed, because that causes so much stress. I mean, you could be meditating 10 hours a day and, you know, doing therapy 5 times a week, but if you owe the tax man a huge amount of money, or you've got serious court cases against you for something, that's clearly going to affect the, you know, your emotional state or your spiritual state, whatever. So the lower right hand quadrant is, as far as I'm concerned, equally as important as any other component of recovery, the psychological component, where there's a lot of emphasis on. So it just basically points out that your recovery process must really adequately address all areas, all levels of development, all lines in your life, because if one area is left sort of toxic or just poorly developed, then it will affect the whole system. I think it's a very obvious thing. And when we speak about it in this context, it sort of nearly seems silly to even say it, because it's very obvious. But if you look at treatment programs and you look at treatment professionals, and you look at it from a quadrant point of view and a line point of view, or even a level point of view, there's actually a lot of areas that aren't addressed. And I think that's one of the reasons why treatment in general has got a low success rate. And I think addiction treatment will always have a poor success rate, but I mean it's always going to have a mediocre success rate, because addicts in general are very difficult people to treat. So even if you have a brilliant program, it's still going to encounter difficulties. But obviously there's better success rates and there's poorer success rates. So I think if one brings in the construct of that, you know, each client or each addict has got different intelligences that needs to be addressed, I think certainly one can increase the person's capacity to stay clean. The way that I like to does it make sense what I'm saying so far? Just checking in with you guys.
Yeah.
Yes, it
sense.
Does.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I have a question, guys. If I can ask a question now, can you give an example of, you said how you spoke of someone can be in different stages of development in either of the four quadrants, and I'm unclear on that. Can you expand how someone can be at, let's say, one stage of development in one quadrant while also being at another? Because I'm thinking of stages. I'm thinking of the colors, you know. I'm thinking like amber, green, orange, teal, or whatever.
Yeah.
So what can you expand on that briefly, how someone can be in one stage, let's say in the lower right hand quadrant? I guess it's all kind of making sense now, but like in one lower right could be in one stage, and then in the upper right or in the upper left could be in another stage.
Sure, that's a good question. The way that I like to sort of quantify these different levels, I like working with what I call six lines of development or six areas of being in the world, which I refer to as physical, the psychological, the existential, the social, and the environmental. Those sort of six areas are also different lines of development. So if you look at someone, and also the intellectual line of development. So if you look at somebody that comes into treatment or was at any stage of recovery, you know, he might be reading sex ecology and spirituality or something, and he might be reading books about quantum physics. So his intellectual line of development in the upper left quadrant might be, you know, really well developed. It might be integral or even post-integral, or just really, the guy is really bright and he's got a very good understanding of things. And then if you move to the right-hand quadrant, that will be his physical line of development. He might be living on McDonald's or have liver cirrhosis from advanced drinking and is just living a very unhealthy lifestyle. So they're just using those two lines of development. Intellectually, his intellectual line of development will be really high, but his physical line of development will be really poor. And what one very often finds in is that example that explains some of it, Amlet? Amlet, are you still there?
I heard the off, like the Skype off thing going.
Are you guys still there?
I'm still here. I can just barely hear Hamlet, though.
Okay. Yeah, I just heard something click, so I don't know what that was. Okay, well, I'll carry on. So just carrying on the question that Hamlet asked, what I've seen very often in recovery, especially in NAA, because there's such an emphasis on the sort of psychological component, not necessarily the therapeutic, but the sort of, you know, step work and fellowship and spirituality and stuff like that, is you get people that are very, you know, fairly well developed, so-called spiritually. They've got good insight into themselves. They've got understanding of the nature of their disease. They're going to a lot of meetings, etc. And within an AA context, they'll be seen as sort of spiritual giants. You know, they're doing a lot of service, they're sharing well in meetings, they look like the poster child of recovery. But when it comes to their physical health and when it comes to their financial stability and their administrative stability and their capacity to look after their children financially, their work life, sometimes they score really poorly on that. And very often that's used as a sort of denial. Like, listen, I'm good in recovery. You know, I'm covering all my recovery bases because I'm doing service, I'm doing step work, etc. Therefore, my recovery is good. I don't see it that way. I see that all of these areas are significant, if not even equally significant. So just because you're doing service, just because you're doing therapy five times a week, you're meditating, I mean, that's all good. But if you in serious financial problems due to lack of organization or, you know, your family is struggling because you can't, you know, keep your administration stuff together, then simply I can't say that you got a good recovery, because the whole system is going to suffer from that. You can't compartmentalize one area from the other. And in that way, I don't even like sometimes using the word a program like we spoke about last time. It's really your lifestyle. So looking at it from a quadrant point of view, what would make sense then is saying that I see somebody's trying to dial me here from my other Skype address. I wonder if that's Hamlet that's trying to come back.
No, it's John. Yeah. I actually answered it by accident, and it knocked me out of this class, so I missed the whole last few minutes. And now I see it calling in, but I don't want to answer it again because I'm afraid it's going to knock me out of this class again.
Yeah. Okay. So pretty much, you know, I don't want to go over the same thing. So pretty much just looking at lines of development is you're going to have lines of development in all the quadrants. Each of these lines of development are going to be at a certain stage. And for you to have what's considered a healthy recovery lifestyle, there needs to be fairly adequate.
Right, I know. I figured it out. I am.
Hi, John. Hi, is that
well,
John?
Everybody's talking. No, I'm square. Okay, thanks.
So the interesting thing about addicts is, I think it was Suzanne Cook-Reuter that said that a sign of pathology is that you're very well developed in some lines and very poorly developed in other lines. And that's what I've often found with addicts is, you know, they in some lines they're really well developed. You can get somebody that's very wealthy, got a good social life, or somebody that comes into treatment and they're really fit, or somebody that comes into treatment and they're really clever. And on the surface, it might seem that they, you know, fairly well-developed people. But one of the signs of addiction is that there's always a couple of lines somewhere that's really, really poorly developed. And what I've noticed is that addicts in general are fairly bright people. I think somewhere I read that on average, addicts have got 15-point average higher IQ than a normal population. And wow. I think there's some element of truth in that, is that, you know, most addicts in treatment are very bright, they can understand things very clearly, but if you explore their psychological development, and even your psychological development is composed out of different lines, which, you know, I suppose there's a lot of debate over, but if we just use the construct of psychological development, there's clearly massive problems there with attachment issues, self-centered, you know, sort of poor development in one's compassion to the world, etc. And I think a sign of addiction is very, very often high intelligence and very low psychological development. And so basically, that's also what Wilb and those guys refer to as a psychograph. That's often used in integral theory, where the different aspects of your interior world can be plotted on this graph. And if you take any addict in early recovery or late stage addiction, you'll see that there's a massive difference between these various levels. And if you take somebody that hasn't got addiction, that's fairly well adjusted, or somebody with long clean time that's got his act together, there'll be some sort of congruence between the different lines of development. So, and a simple way to basically frame it is that pathology always indicates that there's some line of development somewhere along the line that is very poorly formed.
You know, Guy, hi, John here. And using that quote from Jeff Salzman gave me, Ken said that the solution to every problem is developmental. You know, when you think about it, it's like, oh yeah. And when you find people that have these, you know, definite, you know, problems and very low lying so that it's producing pathology, in this case addiction, then you have to identify it and work out ongoing practices so we can get that lying back up to snuff where it's not in a pathological level anymore. And Victoria, are you here?
Yes, I am.
We were talking yesterday about, you know, kind of the just disastrous in the integral world, the spiritual teachers, you know, they just like every, you know, every 6 months or a year or so, one melts down and, you know, something happens. And we were talking about it, and it's just this line level thing. You know, they had maybe at some point they had, you know, really high, you know, spiritual realization, and but they didn't do their, you know, their ego work. They didn't do their shadow work. So eventually it'll catch up and it'll bring down the whole house of cards. And in the shorthand and integral, you know, thing, we just, oh, it's levels and lines. And that just tells you immediately that there's, you know, you're dealing with different lines at different levels, but you're also dealing with some lines that are so low that's causing pathology and it's causing stress and harm to the whole system. And I'll be quiet.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one interesting thing about lines of development is that it's also not a static process. And it's all very relative to where people are in their recovery. So using the idea of a psychograph where, you know, let's say you use a three-tiered scale of poor, adequate, and very well developed, what would consider to be, you know, if you 6 weeks clean, what would be considered a well-developed emotional state would be very different to when you're 10 years clean. You know, when you're 10 years clean, then if you're still displaying the development when you were 6 weeks clean, that would be considered pathological. But if you display that level of development 6 weeks clean, it would be considered, hey, this guy is really getting it, he's working well. So the whole idea, you know, I know you see it as sort of like a, I suppose similar to spiral dynamics, it's like a spiral process, where as you move up these stages, your lines of development at one stage seems adequate. So, you know, you're 6 months clean or something, and then your lines of development all look adequate. You're doing well physically, you're doing well emotionally, et cetera, et cetera. And then as you progress again and you reach a new stage or new challenges in your life, then all of a sudden some line might really drop up again. You know, it's once initially pathological, but you need to up your game for that line of development to stay adequate. I think a good example to use is something like athletics. You know, if your aim is just to, you know, run a you guys use miles, a 5 mile race, just for the fun of it, and you're jogging three times a week for half an hour, that's fine. So you might score yourself as I'm doing the adequate practice for what my goals are. But if your aim is to run the Boston Marathon under a certain time, then those practices aren't gonna get you where you want to go. And the same goes for lines of development and stages in recovery. And I think that's one of the areas that integral recovery really puts a lot of emphasis on and brings a lot of wisdom to, is that very often in the recovery world, there's a sort of one type of practice fits all. And I think 12 Steps and AA and NA, those guys have got very, very good practices worked out for people in early recovery. I think 12 Step fellowships work really well for newcomers. You know, it's pretty much designed for the newcomer, the guy that's struggling with addiction and working through that. But as people progress developmentally into later stages of recovery, these practices get less traction. You know, what worked for you at a certain stage to keep your lines of development, you know, adequate, is going to have less traction at a later stage. So there's a very real correlation between, you know, as John has always pointed out, between practice and development, and lines of development is an easy way to sort of understand that. You know, as you grow, your practices need to become more sophisticated in a way. Not necessarily, you know, you have to do more of it. It's just that the actual practice itself needs to become more sophisticated for you to maintain a healthy line, a healthy level of development in the various lines. And I think understanding that is a very useful construct for people in recovery. Because I've very often heard, you know, somebody's 10 years clean and he's struggling or whatever. And then people say to me, I think you need to go to more meetings, or I think you need to go back to basics, you need to do another step one or whatever. And, you know, that might be true for some individuals, but maybe the issues that the guy is facing isn't on the same, you know, on the same level of development that step one can address. So going back to the basics isn't going to address a complex problem that's on a new level of development. It's saying in the same way that, you know, when you were in grade one, basic arithmetic works for you to get through some problems, but now you're in university, you know, you can't go back to the basics to solve integral calculus or something. So while I'm pointing that out is that I think it's very easy fooling oneself if you're going through a recovery process that, listen, I'm, you know, I'm doing these practices, they work very well for me for a long time, my lines of development seem, you know, stable and everything looks well. But what will happen is if your practices remain exactly the same, I think your lines of development in all four quadrants will actually slowly start regressing, because you're not upping the practice that is relevant for the stage of development that you're in. So basically to keep one's different lines of development, which is what we're speaking about here, at an adequate level, you know, at an adequate level, one's practices need to be continually upgraded in a way to stay healthy. And I think that's a very important point for us in integral recovery. Because otherwise you're gonna regress. As I always say to people, you know, if you're an addict, your natural state, your sort of center of gravity, I wouldn't say necessarily red, but your center of gravity or the state that you're the most comfortable with is addiction, isn't the sort of self-centered, fear-based state of, you know, just doing things the way you like it, having disregard for other people, etc., and the addictive behavior that goes with that. So it's using analogy of somebody that's swimming. If you're an addict, your natural state is actually sinking and drowning. So if you're not continuously sort of pedaling in some way or swimming, you know, doing something, then naturally you're going to regress back to your natural state, which is a pretty low state. Where for people that don't have addiction, or people, the so-called people that are well adjusted in the world, not that I've met that many myself, but you know, their center of gravity isn't that toxic or that low, that so they stop having a practice, they're not going to regress down to, you know, just a poor level of development. But I think addicts as a population have this sort of, you know, like a chaotic attractor that they have in chaos theory, is that if you're not actually doing something, you really regress very quickly. And I've seen that with a lot of people in recovery. They can do fine for a year or two or even a couple of years, and then they just stop having a practice or lifestyle that, keeps them growing, and literally within months or a year, they can regress back to a very similar state they've been in early recovery. And, you know, as John has pointed out a lot in the talks about neuropsychology and the effect that addiction has on the brain, I think, you know, addiction, apart from one's addictive behavior, the actual act of using, etc., you know, as long as you're an addict, I think it's also rewiring all sorts of other systems in your brain. And once you stop using and you're working a program, these sort of traces or memories or neural pathways don't really go away. I mean, I think they can get less and less, but your potential always remains there. And I think the same goes for stuff like depression. If you had a serious depressive episode in your life, then your brain, in a way, sort of remembers, or sort of hardwired to very easily relapse back into depression. And I think the same goes for anything PTSD, etc. So one of the very important things for addicts is that there needs to be a continuous practice or a continuous lifestyle. And like I said, I like using the word lifestyle more than practice at times. that keeps them from regressing, because they regress very quickly if they don't do something about it. Does that make sense? Let me just touch in with you guys. Does that make sense before we go on?
Yes, it definitely does.
So maybe one thing I want to add that I think is maybe useful in this conversation is looking at lines of development in the context of stages of recovery. And I think for those that are on the call, those that have been through an addictive process, or for those of you that might be working with addicts, and we've touched upon this previously, is understanding the sort of stages that people go through when they enter recovery, and maybe the first couple of stages and why that's relevant to understand it in the context of lines of development, which is the focus of our talk here. So maybe we can point out the idea of the amber stage of development as indicated by Wilbur. And very often, I think it's one of the critiques against some forms of treatment that it's too amber or too rigid or too this or too that. And what one must understand is that when somebody enters a recovery process, they very likely moving from a red or infrared sometimes level of development, which is characterized by just an extreme sense of self-centeredness, which will display itself in somebody sort of just doing whatever they want to do when they want to do it. And the reason they're acting like that is that the level of consciousness that they're exhibiting at that stage, intellectually they might be very bright, but emotionally or psychologically, that is sort of the level of awareness which they're operating from. So they've got very little regard for rules or conformity, etc. So for somebody to move to integral or green or whatever, they can't, skip straight from a red level of development straight into, an integral level of development just like that. They need to go up the spectrum through these stages. And the next stage of development is the amber or the old blue level used by Spiral Dynamics, which is the sort of, fundamentalist, sometimes in the pathological sense of the word, but in the healthy sense of the word. And I think that's also something to understand, is that each stage has a pathological manifestation and has a healthy manifestation. Very often we look at blue or amber or the red stages as negative stages. I mean, they're certainly not negative. If you're walking on the street and somebody attacks you and your family, you don't want to, address the situation with a green pluralistic stage and start saying, well, we're all one and it's peace and love, etc. You need to go into red and defend yourself. So all of these stages can either manifest in a healthy way or an unhealthy way. And the blue or amber has certainly got unhealthy manifestations, like an extreme fundamentalism or fundamentalist religion or fundamentalist communism or whatever. But in the positive sense of the word, they also bring a lot of health to people when people integrate that level of development in an appropriate way. And I think one of the most important things for addicts or in an early stage of recovery is to integrate healthy amber or healthy blue into their being. And I think that's why, addiction treatment sometimes can be very rigid, can be very, very authoritarian in a way, and sometimes it's critiqued for that, but I think it's very important, obviously not in a pathological sense of the word. So when somebody cleans up, they need very clear boundaries, they need to learn how to toe the line, they need to actually learn how to trust, not just trust other people, but actually listen to people, and basically do what they're told to do in some ways. And obviously when they move out of that, then there's new challenges. But it's very important for addicts to integrate amber, healthy amber, in all of their lines of development, because I think that's one of the indications of addiction, is that they might be at other levels of development in certain lines, but emotionally, I think the vast majority of addicts are really at below amber level of development, and you can see that in the behavior. So it's absolutely essential that people integrate that. And then at the same breath, if you've integrated your amber level of development in AA or NA or in treatment or with a therapist, then 10 years down the line, it mightn't be necessary for you to integrate, amber anymore or do the same practices that was healthy for you at amber. It might actually become deleterious for you at a late stage of development to think that you need to do the same things that work for you at an amber level of development. So that's just one example, looking at the amber level of development, why it's very useful in early recovery, but it can actually be counterproductive at a later stage. Anything you guys want to add about that?
I have a question, Guy. Touching upon what you were just speaking about, I had this scenario pop up in my head as a theoretical scenario to what you were talking about. And I'm thinking, let's say someone goes into recovery and several years down the road has achieved an amber level of development and things are going well, and for some reason stops the practices, number of reasons, let's say he relapses. But let's say that during that time he or she had stopped, doing the 90-90 and the typical 12-step work of going to meetings every day and working with a sponsor and working steps, and had sort of integrated himself into his own practice, right? And then was to relapse. So what you're saying is that going back to that, he would have to obviously start from where he started back then, which was going to meetings every single day, right? Sitting alone at home meditating or reading spiritual literature or whatever might not necessarily work for him after a disastrous relapse, right? He may have to start from basics again.
Yeah, I think for many, just to add to that, I think the reason why somebody would relapse after an extended period of time is that, as far as I'm concerned, relapse can only happen in a contracted state of awareness. I think it's virtually impossible for anybody to, after being clean for a significant period of time, that's in a high level of emotional and intellectual development, to wake up one day and think, I think it's a pretty good idea to blow my whole month's salary on crack in one night and screw up my life. You just can't think it's a good idea. The only way somebody can start thinking about that again is if there's been some contraction in his awareness, and there's been somewhere along the line, there's been some developmental arrestment going on, and he's not necessarily his intellectual, but let's say maybe his self-line and his emotional line, that his level of awareness is contracted to such a point that he can actually convince himself that it sounds like a good idea. And I think, as John pointed out, all problems is developmental in some ways. What you're probably looking at there is somebody that, might have been doing a lot of good things in his recovery, but somewhere along the line, something went wrong and he started regressing developmentally and downwards in some capacity of his psyche, so that the sort of innate addiction that he still carries with him, that sub-personality of addiction creeped up again and can overpower his away ego and say to him, hey, I think it's a good idea for you to do this. So, relapse doesn't happen without reason. Relapse is a consequence of somebody living a lifestyle that is not conducive to continued emotional, psychological, intellectual, social, etc. development. I've never encountered somebody that remained at a sort of aware level of development. they just woke up one day and used. So, you know, as you point out, I think that's probably one of the reasons why if somebody does relapse after a long time, he needs to go back to some form of basics, because somewhere along the line there was some developmental issue that wasn't addressed. Otherwise, you know, simply wouldn't relapse. And I think that's what the idea of mindfulness is a very useful practice and construct in recovery, is relapse and addiction can only happen in one state of consciousness, which is a contracted state of consciousness. And in a contracted state of consciousness, the idea of using seems very good. If you know, let's take the example of crack. I mean, smoking crack for many people is a very pleasurable experience, and there's no denying that. So if you're in a contracted state of awareness, then you're actually capable of just focusing on that 30-second rush or minute or whatever, and completely block out, you know, the consequences of it, or your past, the history with the substance. And in a contracted state of awareness, it does seem like a good idea, because the only thing you're thinking about is the rush. And if you're just thinking about the rush, then it seems like a great idea. But if you're in an aware state, then you might think, well, a rush might be nice, but in awareness, you can't forget about the past or the potential consequences. So any relapse or relapse process, one of the characteristics that will always go along with that, pretty much has to go along with that, is some form of contracted awareness. And sustained contracted awareness can only happen in lower levels of development. And that's why I say to people, relapse is an accident. You know, you can't tell me that you were doing all this stuff and then you just woke up one day and relapse, because it's virtually impossible to relapse if you're psychologically at higher levels of development. Even if you're going through trouble and that contracts your awareness for, you know, a day or two or a week or whatever. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
We've got about 10 minutes left, so I think I'll stop talking now and maybe just hear from you guys a bit. If there's anything you want to add or want me to expand upon.
Well, this is Victoria, and I'm just picking up on what Tamlet was just inquiring about, and that whole idea that we've all heard about, you know, going back to the beginnings, go to more meetings, etc. And what I'm hearing from you that makes sense is that that can even be regressive for people who are 10 years into recovery or whatever. And so the question that arises for me is, where do you focus when someone has gone through various stages and lines of development and then relapses? How do they discover where it is that the arrested or contracted state exists?
That's a great question.
Yeah, I think it's a very good question. So I would simply say that, let's say I had to sit with a client that was 8 years clean and relapsed last week, and he comes to me and say, "Listen, I don't know what happened." Then I would look at his lifestyle from a, you know, obviously including all elements of integral, et cetera, but what I would particularly focus on is looking at doing analysis of these different levels of development, of lines of development in each of the quadrants, et cetera, and then see what practices he had that sustained those levels of development. And by sustaining, I mean sustained it in a sense that helped those levels remain at either an adequate level or helped it progress. And what one would certainly find then is if you really had to analyze these stories, is that, as I said earlier, somewhere along the line, one of these lines or two of these lines or more must have become pathological in some sense to create such a strain on the whole recovery system that in the psyche, phenomenologically, the idea of using popped up again, that it seemed like a good idea. So I think simply put is that if you look back at what happened, you will definitely find traces or evidence, you know, like a crime scene in a way, of what went wrong. If you can get that information, there will be signs. It certainly won't happen for no reason. And I think in the same way, looking at it from a positive point of view, I think what's good for addicts to understand that's working a program is that if you are addressing these various areas, the chance of you relapsing is, I wouldn't say zero, but becomes, you know, virtually impossible or improbable if you are at adequate levels of development. This is like no way that anybody or anything or any sub-personality or any state is going to just convince you out of the blue that using is a good idea. So in the person, you will find somewhere along the line some issues that went wrong. And then once you find the issues that went wrong, then you can address those particular issues or those particular lines of development.
That makes so much sense. And that is, again, it's just looking at the overall system, all the quadrants, lines, stages, all those kinds of things. You have to look at all of it and then determine where the contractions, where the problems exist.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you. That's.
I think it's like one psyche. If we just focus on our interior world, I mean, what happens with anybody that's going through some form of psychological turmoil, it's not necessarily his whole psyche that's problematic. It's there's certain nearly sub-personalities or certain parts of his psyche that has become problematic. And, you know, as psychoanalysis points out, once these areas, once you become conscious of these areas, you're not necessarily going to cure them, but it certainly gives you a fighting chance to do something about that. You know, if you become aware that you have a sub-personality that is very angry, that causes you to overreact at certain times, then you can specifically focus on that particular sub-personality or that specific aspect of your psyche. You know, you don't need to work every single aspect of your interior world because you just won't have time for that. That's impossible. So in the same way with recovery, you know, many things might have been going right, but there might be one or two that really tripped you up along the way. And I think for a lot of people, the reason they tripped them up along the way very simply is they weren't aware that things, one say that they weren't aware that they existed, but they didn't give these aspects of their being enough validity as a sort of aspect of their being to put a significant amount of time and practice into developing it or acknowledging it. And as a consequence, it, you know, stagnates or regresses.
That makes a lot of sense, Guy. And I mean, it's across the board. I mean, there's a saying in 12-step culture that I hear a lot saying that no addict in recovery will ever use, you know.
Absolutely.
No addict in recovery.
I totally agree with that. And I really do agree with that. And I think for addicts, that's a very liberating thought. Because very often addiction is, you know, given this impression that it's this mysterious thing that happens to you, and recovery is sort of this mysterious thing. We don't know how it works, but if we do it, you sort of hope for the best. I think that's inaccurate. I think we do understand, in fit, not that well necessarily, but well enough what our addiction works. And I think we understand well enough our recovery works. And as you said, like if you are working on yourself in the various areas, you will eventually inhabit a stage of consciousness that becomes semi-permanent, that just does not allow relapse. It just won't allow that. You know, even if you try and convince yourself, like, I really want to relapse now, you know, your state of consciousness is just going to say, well, this is just complete nonsense. So even if you regress, you know, you've got real issues one weekend or for a week or for a month, and you're going through severe turmoil, even in the darkest moments of that turmoil, your stage has become permanent enough at the moment to just never allow the idea of using to be a viable option. And I think that's a really liberating thing for us to know, is because we know if we do the work, it's just not going to happen. But in the same breath, if you don't do the work, sooner or later, something's going to develop down to a red level or some primitive level of awareness. And if you inhabit that level of awareness or state of awareness long enough, then the idea of using becomes a very, very viable option again, and actually seems like a pretty good idea. So, guys, I think we've got a minute left, so I think we're going to have to tie it up here. Any last comments from anybody?
Yeah, hi, it's John here. I've just been,
hey, John.
I've been fixing my parents' food and blah, blah, but I've been in and out. I just really love the level of the conversation and the comments and questions and all. It's very cool.
I agree. It's been very helpful. Thank you.
You know, and I just want to say, just this part of the map, lines, just in itself is enough to revolutionize, you know, treatment. You know, it's amazing. And it seems like each part of the map, just quadrants, you know, just lines, just understanding states of consciousness, levels of development, all of this stuff is just in and of itself can change the whole story. And you put it together and you really just really have something.
Yeah, and I think what's strange to me is, like, you know, as I'm doing this lecture, I'm thinking, why am I even saying this? The stuff is so obvious. You know, like, it feels like I'm sort of talking about something that everyone should just be aware of, you know, just by using common sense. But I think that's the interesting thing about this approach. It's so common sense, yet if you don't encounter it, it seems it's just something that you just don't consider. And once you've considered it, is this really something that you can never forget, that you can never not consider? Because it's like, you know, once you've tasted an apple, you're not going to forget how that tastes like, because it's a very plain experience. So thanks, guys. Thanks for participating, and thanks for the very useful comments and questions. It's great working with people that are so engaged and thoughtful in their engagement.
Great lecture, Guy.
Thanks, Guy. Really inspired lecture. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
So we're meeting on Friday, right? Not Thursday of this week, Friday?
That's right, yeah.
Okay.
Friday. Okay, until Friday.
Okay. Okay, see you, everybody.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.